Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Why don't you do a mic check with me? How does this sound? Let me know what you think. This is Gavin on K-Rock 99, bringing you the greatest hits from the 60s, 70s, and tomorrow.
Do an impression of the stereo. Wah, wah, wah.
I'm Dan Nalen, and you've tuned into another episode of the Soundwaves from the Underground podcast, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it's one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we get totally wired, talking to the new owners of the Mestizo Coffee House. We talk to Yelp's Jeffrey Stedman about all the great coffee spots all over the Salt Lake Valley, and we have a roundtable of coffee purveyors from some of the best places in town. You've tuned in to the right spot. The Mestizo Coffee House is a little coffee shop and art gallery just over the west side, over the viaduct on North Temple there. It originally opened in 2008 and has persevered amazingly through all the construction on North Temple of the tracks line out to the airport, and they are still going strong. They're home to an amazing art gallery featuring local artists every month. They're always taking part in gallery stroll. They have live music there once in a while as well. Slug writer Ben Trendelman chatted with David Galvan about the shop and the current transition between the old owners and the new.
Can you tell me a little bit about the history of Mestizo Coffee?
I can. The coffee shop is owned by a number of different, a nonprofit, a number of community individuals in the community, a couple other businesses that came together about 5 years ago. I'm one of them that thought it would be the founders of the coffee shop were a couple artists.
Okay.
So it's an LLC, so limited liability corporation, that came about to support a vision of these two artists, and it had a couple different components to it. One was it supports a nonprofit there.
Okay, excellent. That's fantastic. And because I think myself and others, I know that Ruby Chacon was one of the founding artists there, and I think a lot of people just assume that she was the owner of the establishment, but that's really neat to find out that it is actually a number of you who all have their hands in the pot and everything like that, and contributing to the success of it. So my next question was going to be, now that Ruby Chacon is moving on, what direction do you plan on taking the shop? But I guess that is not really the case, being that there are a few of you that are involved in it. What do you kind of see in place for the future of Mestizo right now?
You know, Mestizo, and I think that it's even everybody who's involved in it, that we just came out of a mini planning session. The board of MICA, which is Mestizo Institute of Culture and Arts, that has been around for about the same time the coffee shop has, that nonprofit just went through a planning session. And some of the conversation, whenever anybody talks about Mestizo, they say, oh, is a coffee shop or is it a nonprofit? And I think the clarification is, it will never be clarified. It is one, and they are so living together and existing together that even those who have been there since the inception, those that know the legal, the formation, know all the players, can say, well, it's kind of one, but it's kind of two. And the bottom line is the future of the coffee shop. And when you ask me what is a coffee shop, well, it's the space itself, and it's what MICA does. And I think it's not only does it work hand in hand, but it is very much one and the same.
So give me the overall explanation of what Mestizo as an entity represents now.
What MICA does is building community, enriching community, using arts and civic dialogue, and they provide that space. Mestizo Coffee House is the part of it that kind of manages that space for them, part of that thing. So when Ruby and Terry was Ruby's partner, decided to open Mestizo Coffee House and Mika, the art gallery, mm-hmm. they thought people would come and have a cup of coffee before they might go to a gallery stroll. Maybe mm-hmm. they would come, and what they wanted to do is have a space for community to come and engage and serve underserved artists, underserved issues in the community, and address social change through having a place for a gathering, having a place where people could do those things.
So, in sitting just west of the North Temple Overpass, geographically, Mestizo is kind of positioned nicely to function as a bit of a cultural bridge for the area. There's a sense of Latino culture and community that you don't see in many other venues around Salt Lake City, at least that I'm familiar with. And it's also bringing a bit more of that culture that you see in more of the coffee shops that you see around the east side of Salt Lake to West Salt Lake City. How do you see these mingling parties impacting and influencing each other in this unique atmosphere that you've got?
I think it goes back to access.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to being comfortable. There's been a couple documentaries, mini documentary film done on Mestizo. Been a couple graduate, they did their doctoral thesis on the coffee shop. And what I believe adds to Salt Lake City's emerging, this is the new world, mm-hmm. is just being the access, having exposure to something that you might not think about. And what that does for one side is it lets the story be told. What it does to the other side is it brings and allows you to have, and I wouldn't think of it as a cultural experience. I would just think of it as having a little more of an understanding of some stories that don't get as intimate with by reading it about, that's L.A., rather than here. And there's been a number of those things happen in the coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee shop has a lot of people that come in and they don't know about the other people. There's an old mm-hmm. joke out there, but mm-hmm. don't tell them. They think they're the only ones. But they all have ownership to the coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great relationship with the GLBT and some of the events, Sister Spit. We have mm-hmm. a spoken word that's done. We have on and on and on. A lot of people mm-hmm. who come there and they just think it's theirs.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, there's other people that are here. So what I think it is more than anything is it's letting Salt Lake City come into the new world and be comfortable with diverse groups. And I think what Mestizo does is it has such an accepting, tolerant tats and braids and different kind of hair. That's just the norm down there. But mm-hmm. also the norm down there is the log cabin Republicans, mm-hmm. and you have diverse groups that are comfortable with each other because that's just the atmosphere of the place.
How much influence do you think that the shop has had in helping to debunk stereotypes about the quote-unquote sketchy West Side? Is it sketchy around the coffee shop? What are your thoughts?
I think reality is that you are next to the train line.
Yeah.
You were at Salt Lake City's homeless. That population, all the services are concentrated. That's been a discussion for the city and for the downtown
mm-hmm.
and for everybody else. But the reality is Salt Lake City does an excellent job serving, and we have stepped up and served our homeless population,
mm-hmm.
those people that are falling. And we're trying not, and we do such a great job. Those services are concentrated close to the West Side. Planners did a study a few years back, and we are on that line. They travel down to get to the railroad tracks,
mm-hmm.
and we were in that trail.
Mm.
And what is it? We're part of their the way they move about town. So it's close to that, and we're mm. you know, those people are shouldn't be blind to us.
Yeah,
but we're the coffee shop doesn't serve them, but that is part of the reality of the location.
So for me, I live over in Rose Park, and to me, Mestizo is the place to go get a cup of coffee. Are there any other coffee shops in the West Side that you admire from a business perspective?
You know, there's not another coffee shop on the west side. Uh-huh. I walked, and other than obviously right next door to here, the Rose is right down there.
Yeah.
On, we know of them. We go in and we see what they got, and they're doing some great teas and that stuff. But there's nothing on the other side of the tracks.
Yeah.
But for us, it's not that there's other there's somebody else that we, there's a little kiosk that does coffee, and I stop there. It's, I forgot the name of it.
It's in the Viva Marque parking lot
exactly,
over there.
Yeah.
I can't remember
and
the name
they
of
do
it either.
They do coffee, and we wish them well, but they're a whole different animal than us. I hear there's a Starbucks might be coming.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow, yeah. Everybody says, oh, wow, what do you think? And I says, well, you know, that's the nature of the beast. If they do, and that just says that, hey, things are changing as far as North Temple and that goes. That's the other part of us. We truly believe that there is a lot of things available that don't have the awareness besides the Red Iguana, Bill and Lucy, what they do.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you guys have survived the North Temple rebuild, and so you could survive anything at this point in the game, right?
Sure.
So I am partial to the Dirty Monkey, I believe it is, over there with it's like a mocha latte with banana flavoring in it that is awesome. What are some other unique spins that you can find at Mestizo that you're aware of? Which of those is your favorite?
So I'll tell you a real quick story about our bowl of soul. I got a cease and desist letter from a cafe out of state that said we have a bowl of soul and we've trademarked it, and we thought, oh wow, yeah, there is a traffic jam for your customers coming to our door to get ours. Anyway, we changed the name of it slightly. We changed from a bowl of soul, like your soul that is leaves, to a bowl of soul, S-O-L, which is the sun. That is a Mexican mocha that we grind. We take in the Mexican chocolate we grind, rather than using a Ghirardelli's, we take and grind this chocolate and make a powder out of it and use that to make, we can make hot chocolate out of it, or we make a mocha that is obviously chocolate and an espresso, and then we add a little cayenne pepper to it, and it makes a very unique spicy, and we sell a ton of those. We have a drink called the Ruby Mocha that has raspberry in it. It was something about Ruby Chacon, the founding mother. Right now we're doing a cinnamon waffle. The new thing that we just put on the board yesterday and everybody's fine-tuning is a cinnamon waffle that is from a local mill. We do believe everything we can, we do local. That's why our roaster's right here. I could get cheaper coffee via the internet shipped to me overnight, but we believe local.
Good.
But anyway, we're doing a waffle that is an oat, whole wheat, and honey with a little cinnamon, so it's a cinnamon waffle, and we do it Mestizo style, which is we take that Mexican chocolate ground and put that on top of it with a red raspberry syrup, and it is pretty good. So that's another.
Sounds good.
We try and keep things Mestizo style.
Mestizo is located at 631 West North Temple in the City Front Building. For more information, look them up on Mestizo Coffee on Facebook. Despite their seemingly mellow names, Settle Down are actually a five-piece metal band hailing right out of here in Salt Lake City. They originally formed in the fall of 2011, and the current makeup is Eric Rose, Jeremy Condor, Alex Johnson, Taylor Orton, Andrew Hudson. The band contributed a song to the 2012 split single with Sure Sign of the Nail, and they recorded their most recent album just at the end of last year and released it digitally in January 2013. And they will have a physical release date coming up here in early April. We're going to play a song off of that debut album, which is called Be Still. This is a song called Hitchhiker from Settle Down. Settle Down's album is currently available online at scapegoatrecords.bandcamp.com. For more information on the band, search for Settle Down on Facebook. Well, once again, we have special guest Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp, Utah, in the Soundways from the underground bunker to talk a little bit about, we're going to delve into coffee, which, you know, not that long ago was a very foreign concept in the state of Utah in general, and now we have blossomed into a legit coffee capital.
We're like a teenage girl, apparently.
Blossoming all over the place. Yeah.
Careful.
Okay.
Careful.
Yeah, I'll just cut that off right there. Yeah. So, you know, the Yelp people, are the coffee places a popular item for the Yelpers to get on there and yak about a little
bit? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what I thought was pretty cool, first of all, you're absolutely right. Get on Yelp, search coffee, and you have options in any neighborhood.
Boom, boom,
yeah. From anything from Starbucks, you know, down to like, a little tiny niche neighborhood coffee shop. So that was cool, but there are a ton of them, and a lot of them are really, really well reviewed, number wise, and highly reviewed. So yeah. People, if they get it, they're on there, they love it, and they want to tell everybody about their coffee shop.
Excellent. Well, and it's certainly, I know some of the people listening probably remember when we had basically Salt Lake Roasting Company, and that was it for a certain period, and we've slowly grown into this kind of vibrant community now. So, what are some of the favorites of the Yelpers out there?
Well, I'm going to talk about a couple of places that folks talk about for the coffee. I mean, when you talk about coffee, you talk about the coffee, and you talk about the coffee shop. Those are two very, very different concepts.
Absolutely.
So we're going to go with coffee, the coffee part first. And first up, we're going to talk about Cafe de Bola, which is 249 East, 400 South, 4.5 out of 5 stars after 65 reviews on Yelp. We're going to let the Yelper Matthew Z speak for me. He says, "This place will serve you the fanciest, most gourmet, delicious coffee you have ever had in your life, bar none. Their Americanos are unlike any you've ever had, and they make delicious boba tea. Not too sweet, but very flavorful. The coffee is easily 6 out of 5 Yelp stars. I challenge anyone to negatively criticize their intimate mastery of their beans or their brewing."
Whoa. The Matthew Z sounds like a serious coffee drinker
to me. He's into the coffee. Yeah.
And he's right. They take incredible care of your coffee there.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
For them, it's all about the art of the coffee. I will say that like the coffee shop side of things, I don't know that it's somewhere I ever go to like open a laptop and plunk away. That's not their jam. Their jam is all about getting you a good high-quality beverage and coming in, making a purchase, and doing
moving
that.
Moving on.
Moving on, yeah.
That's
for
right.
For sure. Another place I want to talk about is No Brow Coffee and Tea. Now, No Brow just moved. They used to be at 315 East, 300 South. This really recently, they moved to a new digs, 179 West, 900 South. The new place has 4.5 out of 5 stars, just 2 reviews. For reference, though, the old place, 4 out of 5, 33 reviews.
Absolutely.
So it's Joe, and he took his whole operation over there. For bonus points, Joe and I were Boy Scouts together as kids.
Nice.
He's the owner over there.
Excellent.
Lara S. snagged the FTR, what we call the FTR on Yelp, first to review. She says, "They now offer a pour over, and it's darn good." Owner offered 3 options for beans, and I chose the Colombian. Bright and light-bodied, but rich and smooth.
Shmooth.
Thank you, Laura S.
And I'm going to assume the new location, having not been there yet myself, but been to the old one many a time, that was a super comfortable place to hang out, whip out your laptop.
Yeah,
meet
yeah.
friends, chill, but
yeah,
I imagine he's keeping that vibe going.
Same vibe. If you can't go check it out, get on Yelp and look at the photos. There's some interior photos there. It's smaller. It's a smaller place than the old one was, but it's the same, like, No Brow vibe. That's his whole.
Well, it's kind of that neighborhood it moved into over there on the 9th South and a little bit west. I think it's the Granary District is how they're labeling it now.
Oh, yeah,
it's
for
definitely
sure.
kind of up and coming over there between restaurants and other little cultural institutions. Pretty cool. Good move.
Yeah, I love the Granary District. You have Frida, you have Ruby Snap,
you have
Art Space, all that cool stuff going on. Let's move on to Mestizo. Mestizo Coffee House. 4.5 out of 5 stars, 10 reviews. That's at 631 West, North Temple. Evel says, "The atmosphere." We're moving more to the atmosphere now. "The atmosphere is really nice. Dark, but not too dark. The walls decked out with art and cool paint colors, eclectic furniture." So it is, they're kind of more involved in like an artsy thing going on
definitely.
Over there. And they do have some back to the roots of Mestizo Coffee House, like a Mexican mocha.
Delicious.
Some interest, have you had that?
I've had the Mexican hot chocolate there, actually.
Oh.
And it is something to write home about. And they have an art gallery there that's always got some really cool stuff going on based in the Hispanic community, basically. And Ruby Chacon, local contemporary artist, her studio was right there. A attached to the space where you could literally look through a window while you sip a coffee or whatever and check out her working on stuff for a while.
Yeah, it's super, super, like, cool space. Eval, if you read on her review, she says, it's cool, too cool for me. So, and Eval's pretty cool. We've met a few times at Yelp events, yeah. So I just want to go through just some other ones of note. I mean, again, you just can't, like, I mean, there's now so many coffee places, but some of the highest rated. We'll pull Jack Mormon Coffee, 4.5 out of 5, 47 reviews, up in the Avenues, 82 E Street.
Absolutely.
Blue Star Juice and Coffee, 4.5 out of 5 after 35 reviews, 2795 South, 2300 East. Alchemy Coffee, 4.5 out of 5 after 34 reviews, down on 17th South and 390 East.
Yeah, they do some live music and stuff in there too. Once in a while, little acoustic shows. Great little spot.
Yeah.
That's my neighborhood.
Oh, that's your. That's it.
They have cool art on the walls a lot of times too. So
yeah,
a fun little spot.
One of my favorite places, and actually where I hired the Yelp Mantern. He's a man and he's an intern. We call him Mantern. Why? Because nice. We can get away with it.
Excellent.
Was at the Rose Establishment, which is not too far from the Slug Soundwaves bunker.
There you go.
3.5 out of 5 stars, 51 reviews, 235 South, 400 West. No Wi-Fi, people. No Wi-Fi. Some people are not grooving on that, but I kind of like that.
I like the space.
Yeah, I love the space.
Despite that, love the space.
Yeah, for sure. But as you mentioned, Salt Lake Roasting Company, if you want to go someplace to hang out, Coffee Garden at 9th and 9th. Yeah.
Always packed.
If you can find a seat for more bonus interview questions, that's actually where I interviewed for the job for Yelp. And
there you go.
And that worked out for me. So hopefully it'll work out for you. Yeah, but I mean, finding a plug and getting to, I mean, that's always people there, especially in the summertime.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's a great vibe.
That's true. The great outdoor space in the summer,
love
too.
It.
Yeah.
I like Coffee Connection down across from Salt Lake Community College. What is that, like 15th South or so in State Street? You know, it's a lot of people in and out of there, but there's some couches. There's a study hall, a place where it's quiet. A lot of times since I work out of the laptop, I'm out in coffee shops, and we have some great places to go and do that. So, you know, we have a good mix. Like you say, there's places where you can get a really, really great cup of coffee and places where, you know, it's more about the vibe.
That's right. And suffice to say, almost all these places are going to be higher quality than Starbucks for some of us who really don't like Starbucks coffee that much. I mean, as much as I think Starbucks was probably one of those things that in Utah, we were really excited when they came to town. Like, people are excited about a Cheesecake Factory or something. Right? Like, hey, we finally made the big time. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but having all these great little local places with a lot of different vibes going on, it's really a good indication of kind of a thriving, cool town. You know?
Yeah, I will say for the last, apparently interviews and coffee shops are a big thing. When I go to interview people and I give them a chance to say, where should we meet? And if they say Starbucks, then I won't interview them. No, that's really true. That's really a test.
When I met with Angela Brown and Gavin Sheehan about doing this very podcast gig, it was at No Brow Coffee.
There you have it.
It doesn't get any bigger than that, right?
There you have it.
Jeffrey, tell us where we can find Yelp out there in the World Wide Web.
Absolutely. Go to Yelp.com. You can select your location of Salt Lake City or search anywhere in the 20 countries where we are located now.
Ooh.
Download the free app on any kind of smartphone that you have. Find me at Yelp Utah on Twitter,
or
you can go to the Facebook and find us at Yelp SLC, facebook.com/YelpSLC. And we're always out there making some kind of ruckus.
Doing some events and whatnot pretty regularly out there.
Yeah, we've had last month, February was Burger Wednesday.
That's right.
We got some really, really cool stuff coming up as the weather gets warm, so stay tuned.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely check back with you and see what's going on next in Yelp World. Thank you so much for the coffee breakdown.
You got it.
This is your weekly daily calendar starting on April 2nd, and believe it or not, we are already into April. As always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com on a daily basis and check out new listings going up there all the time. I perused a little while ago and found some awesome shows coming up this week. Let's start on Tuesday, April 2nd, where Paperbird, 7-piece indie folk band from Denver, an expansive sound, definitely for an indie rock band, they're headlining at Urban Lounge on that Tuesday. On the 3rd of April, Serious Reggae Show up at Park City Live, and that place is starting to book a pretty steady string of reggae up there. Michael Rose and Sister Carol, both headliners in their own right, playing together up at Park City Live on Wednesday, April 3rd. On April 4th, easily one of the hottest shows coming up here, over at the Depot, some serious competition for your concert dollar. Jeff Mangum, formerly of Neutral Milk Hotel, he is headlining a show at the Depot that is another one that I just have a feeling will be packed, and believe it or not, same night, minus the bear, up at Park City Live. We got a serious indie rock night there on April 3rd. That's pretty crazy. Those guys are straight out of Seattle. Been coming through for a few years. Should be quite the show if you want to get up to Park City instead of staying in Salt Lake. On Friday, April 5th, another huge indie rock show, Spiritualized. English psych rockers led by Jason Pierce. They've had some great shows over the years. I remember seeing them back in the Deviate days of all places. Great show. That'll fill up Urban Lounge with ease. Also on April 5th, of course, you'll want to get out there and grab yourself the brand spanking new issue of Slug Magazine, hot off the press, located anywhere cool that you might be. On Saturday, the 6th of April, another kind of great psych rock band, Spindrift, playing over at the Garage out there on North Beck. That should be a blast. And then up at Park City at the Echo Center for the Performing Arts, Todd Rundgren, who's had a really long, strange career, was thought to be Lily Taylor's father for many years before she realized Steven Taylor was her father. He did that I Don't Want to Work, I Want to Bang on the Drum All Day song that every hack drive time FM DJ has played for the last 30 years. He joined the Cars, a defunct version of the Cars at one point when Rick Ocasek couldn't be back. But he's also had a steady string of his own hits, and he's playing with a string group called Ethel. Should be an interesting show. Another thing you'll want to note, get yourself on Kickstarter and help local band Tragic Black fund their new album. We heartily endorse that. As always, go to slugmag.com every damn day. Check out the new listings. You can also add your own listings for your own events, of course. The directions are right there. If you want to add some quality content to it, it's a mere $5 a month, $50 a year. That's your weekly daily calendar. Pretty exciting stuff here coming from Baby Ghosts, a four-piece poppy punk band from Salt Lake City that had a great year in 2012 with their debut full-length album called Let's Always Hang Out Together, Okay? Love that title. They've recorded a brand new 7-inch over this winter called Ghost in a Vacuum. We're going to play a song from this EP that is called Heaven is a Place in Space. We'll be right back. purchase the new Baby Ghost EP, check them out at babyghost.bandcamp.com. And for more info on the band, search Baby Ghosts on Facebook.
All right, so we have three representatives as liaisons from three different coffee shops here today. They each have their own sort of brewing technique that we're highlighting today on Soundwaves. We have representatives from No Brow, Cafe de Bola, and from the Rose Establishment. We almost had Cruiser Roland from Jack Mormon Coffee, but he couldn't make it, so we're just going to have to sit down with him next time. First, if you guys want to, starting with you, Joe, moving left to right, just introduce yourself and which shop you're from.
I'm Joe Evans with No Brow Coffee Works.
Hi, I'm John Piquet with Cafe de Bola.
And I'm Cody Kirkland from the Rose Establishment.
And I'm Alex Ortega, junior editor at Slug Magazine. And so I'm just going to ask you guys a couple questions and you guys can just respond as you see fit. And so the first question is, what methods do you use to brew coffee at your establishment, and why do you select those methods?
We primarily focus on two methods right now. We've experimented with quite a few over the years. So we do have a bulk brewer, you know, that's your standard brews into an air pot. We dump those pots regularly, brew fresh, keep it fresh. We bring in a little bit less, so it's not inferior, but a less expensive bean for that. It's not my preferred method of brewing, but we've tried really hard to balance convenience with our customers and then our own personal feelings about coffee and freshness and things like that. It's not a terrible method for brewing, but we definitely prefer brewing cups to order. The other method that we do quite a bit of is pour over, usually using a ceramic cone called the V60. It's built by Hario. It's a Japanese developed piece of equipment, just a refiguring of the old Melita, like you may be familiar with French brewing. And we also use a Chemex occasionally, although not super frequently on the Chemex, just mostly because it's a large piece of glass to send out to a table with somebody.
Yeah, so we only do siphon brewing at Cafe de Bola. We brew everything for the siphon in-house, and we serve that black only for our customers. Other than that, it's the only really method of brewing that we do. We see it as a philosophy of brewing, not as a brewing method. So much in the same way that Japanese look at tea making with their matcha, that's the same way I approach the coffee.
Awesome. Yeah. Cody?
The Rose Establishment, our go-to kind of house coffee, we brew in French press. That's kind of over the past few years, it's made kind of a resurgence, but it's a pretty old school method of brewing. No paper filter. It's kind of more of a rustic cup of coffee, I guess, as you're getting a lot of the dissolved solids in the coffee, whereas drip coffee or pour over, it's filtered out. And we also offer Clever Dripper, a hybrid of pour over and more of an immersion coffee. So that gives some of the benefits of pour over, or some of the benefits of French press, where it's a longer brewing time but still filters out sediment, some of the oils, where French press would let you taste those.
Cool. And the next prompt is about the equipment you use, which you, Joe and Cody, just mentioned right now. If you could say why you choose the equipment you use. Let's start with you, Cody, this time about the Clever Dripper and what, you know, brand of French presses you use and what have you.
The Clever Dripper is, it's a piece of plastic. It's not quite as elegant as a traditional pour over, the Hario, or like a glass or a ceramic Hario, but I like that because in a really busy cafe environment, it's easy to, we time the brewing. There's a valve on the bottom of the drip cone that holds the water in until we decide to stop the brewing, so we can time it perfectly without being there standing by it, and that's probably why we chose that, like as our additional brewing method, whereas
right.
We chose French press to do our bulk brewing, and we'll just brew in a giant French press and put it in an air pot just to do something different. It's not my favorite way to brew coffee, but I think it's a really interesting way to introduce some coffees to people.
Cool. John, how about with Cafe de Bola?
So we're exclusive for all of our equipment. We use Siphon, a company called Tokyo, primarily because all the glass is made in Japan. There's a couple other manufacturers out there with really inferior glass. Hario is exceptional, but you pay for it. This I won't say that it's not made by Hario, but there's only two main places in Japan that make the coffee glass, and this is one of them. And then all the rest of the parts are actually assembled in Taiwan, so we get a really good rate on that. We use a halogen heat source rather than a gas flame for that, and then we are the only distributors outside of Asia for that. And that's just really for the siphon. It's just the best way to really heat the water to create more ambient heat, and it's going to result in a little bit better cup that way.
And Joe, you already kind of delved into the Hario pour-over contraption that you... Is there anything else you'd like to add about that?
Well, we got there after a long journey. You know, it was... We didn't start that way. We started for our brew-to-order coffee with French Press. A lot of the coffees we were serving, we felt, were a little muddled coming off the French Press. I think that there's ways around that that people have explored in recent years, decanting more quickly, you know, leaving the solid sediment behind in the press, things like that, correct agitation, things like that. There's ways around that. But, you know, we were finding, and then we actually played with siphons for a couple of years as well. When John talks about inferior glass, we were dealing with the Yama siphon, and they broke if you looked at them wrong. You know, that was...
That's a brand name. So the Yamas are made very heavy, and so they look substantial, but most of the glass for them is made in China. And so it can't withstand that rapid cooling. And,
We were finding, I mean, it was just user error when we were breaking them. I mean, it would be the kind of thing like you'd when you'd be popping the top off to clean it, the stem would break, you know, things like that. And so as we were reassessing this, as, you know, what way we wanted to do our individually brewed cups of coffee, it was kind of as the resurgence of pour-over was happening. You know, I mean, you know, Hario had kind of repopularized siphon brewing. You know, John was early on that. I think everybody knows it from Blue Bottle. We were also having trouble with temperature control because we couldn't afford those awesome halogen lamps that you guys have. And so after a long discussion with a couple of our distributors, we kind of transitioned into pour over, partially because we were super happy with the quality of cup coming off of it. We felt like, at least in our minds, we were getting, when doing it right, we were getting something as good as we were getting off our siphons. But the second part of it for us was where we're trying to, as a shop, bring people to coffee and then bring the coffee back to the people. We felt like this was a more accessible method that you could actually teach the customers and people could competently do at home. You know, it's to do siphon correctly is incredibly difficult, and I won't even pretend that I did it. I mean, you know, it's not impossible. I mean, but the getting your temperature right, things like that can get squirrely, you know, and to do it well at home, it gets very expensive. Whereas the pour over, a good kitchen scale, a ceramic cone, and some good paper filters, and you can go.
I agree for the most part, but I wouldn't sell yourself short on the pour over. I usually tell people that's the, I think, single most misused method is the pour over. Because people tend to try to rush it, and so when you're getting those really good cups, you know that it's all about your pour, and that you know, you put a lot of work into that. It's not, hey, go home, pour in a circle, and you're all done. So it's you know, for those that are listening, while the methods all look simple, they all tend to be very complex.
The nice thing about pour overs, you can build it a piece at a time. You know, I mean,
and
you can get a better than a regular drip brewer cup of coffee, even if you don't have the appropriate equipment to measure your pour. We love both the Bonavita and the Hario gooseneck kettles. The pour control and rate control on that is amazing. And it does take a lot of practice to get good at it. I'm not trying to, you know, nor am I saying you can walk home and do a perfect pour over your first time. But I feel like, you know, you can buy it a $23 piece at a time. And so, you know, that's what I meant by the accessibility. You know, is it something that I think it lends itself to home use a little better?
Cool. All right, and so now just moving over to roasters and roasting. First, I'm going to ask you, Cody, the Rose uses four barrel exclusively, correct?
Not exclusively now. We've used them exclusively until the past few months, but
okay.
We do feature one coffee available as a pour over from Charming Beard every week.
Oh, great. And so why do you choose those two roasts at the Rose?
As far as four barrel goes, rather. I guess when Erica, the owner of the Rose establishment, when she was shopping around for roasters, I guess four barrel, the beans they use, the green beans they use to the way they roast, and their whole coffee philosophy kind of matched what Erica wanted to bring to Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. As far as they'll use, all of their coffees are direct trade, and they'll go directly to the farms and set up accounts with specific farmers and work with them and pick the best coffees they can find. A lot of them, well, all of them are roasted just for each particular varietal, not for like a desired roast.
Right.
As, I mean, obviously John and Joe both use coffees like that where the name of the roast, you know, French roast or light roast, it doesn't really mean anything anymore. It's
right. It's all about
cooking.
The bean.
Yeah, it's like cooking. I mean, you don't want to order a steak based on just the amount that it's cooked. You want to taste the actual thing you're ordering.
Right.
I heard it described really well by, his name, one of our old sales rep from Ritual Roasters said, you know, people forget that the coffee is a fruit, and we like returning the coffee to its fruit origins. You know, so it's a matter of approaching roasting in a style, and I, you know, Four Barrel does this, John does this, you know, the roasters we use. It's approaching the roasting in a way where you're trying to highlight all the best aspects of that fruit.
And Joe, you also use Charming Beard. Charming Beard is a local roaster, for those who don't know, ran by Levi and by his partner's name is...
Well, there's Josh Rosenthal involved. There's a handful of people involved in it these days. Levi's primarily the roaster.
Levi Rogers. Well, you have Charming Beard as well. And what other roasters do you use and why?
We currently in stock, we have some Intelligentsia beans. We have Handsome Coffee Roasters, and we have... Charming Beard. We also have worked really closely with Ritual Roasters, Herkimer Coffee Roasters, Kova we worked with for a bit, and we're kind of right now actually reassessing as we moved into a new location how many coffees we want to keep bringing in. You know, not that we love everybody that we've brought in. We worked with Hart for a little while. There's been a handful of others, Counterculture for a minute, but shipping was a nightmare with that. So right now we're trying to figure out, you know, who can most capably support us as a shop. Mm-hmm. And who can we best represent as a shop? And so it's a little bit in flux, but that's kind of the way we are. We're a little crazy because we're never happy with the status quo. We're always reassessing the way we do everything. So when I started the shop, it was we served Intelligentsia coffee roasters. We were the first shop in Salt Lake to serve those guys. And it was awesome. And I had a conversation one day with a guy who said, you know, if you go to a bar and you sit down and they only had squatters on tap, but it was just, you know, a bar, you'd say, why do you only serve squatters? But you go to squatters where they brew it and it makes sense why you'd only have one beer. So I started reassessing that concept of why only one, and modeled some of our selections a little bit after a shop that pioneered that idea in Portland called Barista. Mm-hmm. And we looked at some of what they had. We were familiar with a lot of coffees. You know, the other thing is we'd had a million conversations of, I love Intelligentsia. Have you ever tried this? Or have you ever tried this? And so we've spent a lot of time just experimenting, and how we decide what coffees we keep and what we don't is one part quality. I mean, it always has to be a particular level of quality. The second part is our customer relationship, how their wholesale program looks, what kind of support they can offer us, what we can do to offer them, how much we're being kind of groundbreaking for bringing them into Salt Lake. And then Charming Beard was kind of a no-brainer for us. Those guys were nearly daily regulars. They were home roasting, they were experimenting on us. We were, you know, playing with their coffees in-house, so as they transitioned into a more professional organization, we partnered with them very closely and we still work with them. I mean, Levi brings coffees to us to proof them and then takes them back and tweaks it based on our recommendations.
Yeah,
and
cool. You guys were using them when it was still La Barba.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You were the first shop to...
Yeah, well, you know, he asked us if he started roasting, if we'd be interested, and that's kind of how it got going with him. And so, and with him, there was a lot of trial and error, you know. I mean, the learning curve on roasting, Steve John can speak better to this than I can. but the learning curve's steep. But we believed that Levi had what it took to become a fantastic roaster, and he really is developing into doing some pretty outstanding stuff. So.
Yeah, as Joe mentioned, John, you Cafe de Bola is its own micro roaster, and yeah. so with you, in your case, it's a little different because you are the roaster.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so how do you select beans to roast?
Everything we select strictly based on the quality of the cup. We source everything through a small distributor out in California. And for us, you know, we're tiny. Everything we either do is by the cup on the siphon or through the espresso machine. So don't go through a huge volume of coffee. And we want to be able to still have a lot of different things that we can offer. So I just get things in much smaller amounts. You know, we've been working exclusively with the same distributors for about 7 years. Everything that they do is direct trade. You know, as much as they can. You know, obviously there's some coffees that nobody gets direct trade because you're forced to buy through auction. For us, when we first started, we were espresso based only, and we sourced our coffees through a traditional Italian roaster called Cafe D'Arte out in Seattle, and those guys are awesome. But after about a year, I wanted to start toying with you know, roasting myself. Just started on a tiny little shop roaster and did that for about a year and a half or so. And then we had an opportunity to get a better roaster and been, you know, using that since then. So for that, you know, as both these guys were mentioning, you know, we do everything to a varietal roast, you know, really to maintain all those varietal flavors. And so a lot of times you hear people throw all these other I have no clue they're talking about. Well, I do, but yeah, I just ignore it, you know, because it's like they, you know, we don't do anything dark roast there. You know, there's not gonna be, I don't think any of the roasters that any of us are using, really any reputable roaster, would do what, you know, people would consider dark roast. I think everything is somewhere between a medium light roast and a very dark medium roast, but you're never going to start getting roast aspect in there. You're always going to, even when you take it to the edge for some of the like Indonesian coffees and that need a little bit more heat, you're always maintaining that flavor that's natural to the coffee, you know. And I think that's really the best way to represent it.
And yeah, it does seem like most contemporary coffee purveyors are currently offering light roasts in order to bring out that character of the bean and, you know, that element of the earth from which it comes. And, you know, it's sort of eschew dark roast, blended roasts, I don't know. But to what extent is this true for each of the shops that you guys represent? And taste-wise, what do you look for in those types of roasting practices? Cody, you mentioned that earlier, kind of with four barrel being a good candidate roaster. You want to take the helm next?
As far as roasting goes, I don't pay much attention to the roast level on the beans because I don't know anything about the roasting itself. As far as blends and things go, we do, for our espresso, we do use a blend primarily, and right now it's a blend of two coffees from Four Barrel. It's a Guatemala and an Ethiopia. I can't remember the varietals. Guatemala Las Cañas and Ethiopia. As far as all the other coffees go, they're all single origin, just from one co-op or one lot or stuff like that, where I don't know why I compared it to steak before. I mean, I don't even eat meat, but
I compare coffee to savory things.
Yeah,
all the time.
I get super nerdy about roast lamb
when I'm tasting coffee.
I mean, I've never been disappointed from anything from Four Barrel, but when they'll send samples, I'll look for something that's really exciting tasting, something different out of the ordinary, and I'll order based on what knocks my socks off, I guess. I mean,
do you like more like berry flavors or more like caramel, or like what do you like personally?
I go through phases. Right now I'm getting really into really bright, more acid heavy, more kind of citrusy, fruity.
Nice.
I go through phases. It's the same as beer or whatever. But the other day, one of the samples that Four Barrel sent us was a Kenya Katarina or Caratina. I can't remember where the R&T goes, but it was like, it shocked me how different and just exciting tasting it was, and that's the kind of coffees I'm constantly looking for from Four Barrel. Cool. And they always provide it. So
next question: in terms of taste and aromas, or whatever other elements of flavor profiling that you recognize, what do you aim to bring out in the coffees you brew?
I mean, as far as what we want to bring out, we want to best highlight the any coffee we bring in. We put a lot of trust in our roasters, barring our relationship with Charming Beard, where we actually have quite a bit of back and forth with them. There's quite a bit of adjustment on that. It's awesome. That relationship's been really fun for us. But we put a lot of trust in our roasters. A lot of the people we serve are very well established, or we were floored by them when we got our initial taste from them. So we're willing to kind of give a little leeway when we're ordering that, and then experiment on our end for how best to prepare it to highlight those flavors. I personally, when I'm looking at a coffee, I like really mild, mellow, sweet, approachable coffees. I tend to favor a lot of Central and South American coffees. I always joke that African coffees are what you impress your friends with at a dinner party because they're so explosive. I mean, you know, you talk about Kenya. We had a couple of Kenyas in over the last couple of years that tasted like strawberries drenched in balsamic vinegar, you know. It's just like, it was just so loud and exciting. It was an amazing cup of coffee, but it's not what I want to sip at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Yeah. I personally tend to drink mostly espresso when I'm at the shop, though. So.
Okay.
Or lattes. Yeah.
Which is a whole other beast.
So a whole other beast we would
That'd probably be coffee episode number two.
Yeah.
You know, kind of with all this technical talk, John, what would you say your shop's philosophy is in building a cup of coffee? You mentioned this to me before, just kind of from the ground up, so to speak.
For us, really, it is about best highlighting that coffee. You know, we always tell people that there's at least 70 pairs of hands that touch the coffee from the time that it's planted till the time it gets to the customer. And it's how well each pair of hands takes care of that coffee, you know, that's really going to determine how good the cup is. Basically, it's you know, for better lack of a of any way to say it, it's my job not to fuck it up.
Because I like that.
If everything is perfect along the line, you know, even if I do a great roast on the coffee, if I don't brew it properly, then essentially I'm just kind of screwing over everyone else in the chain. You know, for as much press as wine gets, a lot of times, you know, you can teach a monkey to open the bottle and decant, you know, if necessary. But with coffee, everything has to be, so even if you get if Joe gets something from a great roaster and one of his baristas doesn't follow his instructions properly, then it's not gonna come out. You know, if I'm slacking off and not paying attention, then I just screw up my own coffee. And so I think every step of the way you have to pay attention, because it's really in order for the customer to get the best cup, you really have to, I think, brew it really with care, you know, when you're brewing your coffee. And that's really, for us, when we do the siphon, you know, I don't see it as a brewing method. I see it as an entire philosophy. And when I taste siphon at a lot of other places, it's lacking something. I think it's really because they're approaching it from the wrong philosophy. They're seeing it as they're either number chasing, trying to follow temperatures and things to get from point A to point B, rather than really embracing the entire concept and then trying to create something for the customer that you really, you know, maybe you can't put your finger on or can't explain. But I think, you know, all of us as baristas sort of understand that there's, the consistency is very important, but there's a lot of intuition that you essentially just have to be in the moment when you're brewing, and it'll work itself out.
Coffee synergy.
Yeah, I hate that idea that there's like a set way to do anything. Like we feel, and it's a hard thing to teach, you know, I mean,
it must be at 197.6.
But we're seeing a lot of that in the industry these days. We're seeing these like extreme measures, and I'm like, you should be able to just, you know, that crust on that coffee is just right, and you know just when to break it, and it's an internal, it's an emotional response. Like when you're really in it. I mean, I've been a barista for 17 years now, and for years and years and years, it was about what you could do as a barista to fix the coffee. Now, like John's, like, what can you do to not fuck it up?
Yeah.
And you know it. It's an inherent thing. When you really live it, you know it.
One thing we do at the Rose is what I've done when people are stressing out and trying to really get their shit together, espresso-wise, you just take away the shot timer, And don't let people look at a shot timer. They know if it's a good shot. They know if
they're brewing it. You can smell it. You can see it. You know.
It's like Jedi shit.
And so we're running out of time here, but in 10 words or less from each of you, starting with you, Cody, what do you recommend for people like me who like coffee but aren't really sure how to get the best cup at home? What's the best way to get a good cup of coffee at home?
Measure the dose with a scale. Time it and pay attention.
Or would you say like French press, pour over? Which would recommend for somebody to do at home?
At home? Clever dripper. That's probably the easiest way to do it at home.
Cool.
Or John? French press.
Good hand grinder, fresh coffee, press. It's simple and repeatable. And for home, you know, that's really all what you're looking for.
Yeah. Joe?
Develop a good relationship with your barista. I mean, not like you bring them home, but you know, like...
Joe,
like,
come on!
But no, I mean, seriously, like, I tell people to call us at the shop if they get stuck. Like,
right.
Like it's... To me, like, you know, nobody's going to know how to handle your coffee better than the barista that's handling it every day. So if you're going to John, like, you're not getting the cup you like at home, go back to John and say, what am I doing wrong? You know, you go to Cody, come to me, you know, like... So yeah, develop a relationship with your barista.
Josh Payne did that actually on Christmas Day when all the shops were closed and we were closed. He was on Twitter saying he needed a cup of coffee and I brought him over to my apartment and made him a pour over.
Nice.
Yeah, awesome. I kept asking customers.
Josh goes everywhere, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And so one last time, if you could say your shop and your address real quick. Let's start with you, Joe.
Nobra, we're in a new location. It's 179 West, 900 South. It's awesome. You should come check it out.
John?
Cafe de Bolo, we're at 249 East and 400 South, directly across from the City Library.
And Cody?
The Rose Establishment at 235 South, 400 West, between Pioneer Park and Gateway Mall.
Great. All right, stick around for the espresso episode, people.
I can't wait.
Once again, thank you for listening to the Soundwaves from the Underground podcast. And for all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Be sure to tell your friends. We're going to have Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp Utah back in the studio in a couple weeks to talk about all the best brunch places around town. And we want to know where you like to go when you're fighting a hangover or just really damn hungry between breakfast and lunch. You can either send us an email at soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we just might play your suggestion on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design are by T. Doan and the technical design by Kate Colgan. Be sure to tune us back in next week when we'll discuss Plan B Theater's latest production, Suffrage. We'll have Brian Staker, host of the Awkward Hour podcast, right here in the studio, being awkward all up in your face. And we'll have a little story about By Invitation Only, an exclusive dining club in Salt Lake City. Thank you very much.